Recording in progress. Well, welcome everybody. It's now week 10. We've got just a couple weeks left together. I hope you're doing well. We've had a series of guest speakers, and I hope you found the meeting last week with Tracy useful and enlightening. I certainly always appreciate hearing different angles and different perspectives on some of the needs for diverse learning in our classroom. We've created a post or resource for you on accessible technologies, because that wasn't something that we talked too much about last week, but there's a bunch of technologies that can be used for creating accessibility in physical classrooms or for online spaces. The live transcript, of course, is one that I'm using here to give you access to that text in addition to what you're hearing from the speakers. Right, so let me just share my screen. Today we're going to talk about something you folks all have a very intimate experience with, at least for the past year. We call it distributed learning, but it really is that notion of online or technology mediated learning that is our whole program is technology mediated right now. So I think it's not maybe what you signed up for, but it's where we're at in terms of where the world's at, and we're doing our best. And I'm sure along the way you're learning, some things seem to work pretty well and some things don't work that well at all, or some things are obviously missing from the experience that being together would afford us. A couple updates before we launch in. I did put out a doodle poll last week. That doodle poll is to find a time for March 31st when we're going to run an EdCamp session. And we're going to combine two sections of this class together to run an unconference, a conference where you decide what the topics are going to be. And then we'll have some time to discuss those topics in groups. So you have a chance to mingle with another group of folks. We may invite some actual people who are teaching or people who are working in teaching and learning in the district to attend as well, depending on the time that we're able to run that. So if you haven't done that already, there's a link. I'll post it in the Mattermost after the session today. And I'm really looking for your input there, because we're trying to get it so that the most possible people can join us on that day and on that within that hour. It's going to be a Wednesday as opposed to a Tuesday. And we'll do it within an hour. And I'll probably introduce the concept to you before we do that actual session. And then you'll have a chance to launch right into the session on the 31st and have some rich discussion. You'll be able to brainstorm topics within the realm of technology, but also outside of the realm of technology, if you wish, to discuss with the group. Any questions about that? Looking in the chat, crickets. Now, I may be having some trouble with my video today. It seems to be lagging a little bit, so sorry about that if that is the case. I'll try to keep an eye on it. So we've done an interim meeting together, you and I, each one of you, to look at your portfolio, address questions, see where you're at. We're going to have one more final meeting, and I've just opened up the booking for those final meetings now. So I'll share this link out as well after the session. It's going to be a 10-minute meeting. We're going to look at your portfolio, talk about the course, what stood out for you, what was perhaps missing, how we can improve. And then I'll give you some feedback on the experience and both your inquiry. You may not be done your EdTech project by then. You may have not presented, but we can chat a little bit about that too. Going to keep it really informal, just like last time. You all have been engaged with this course, so I don't really see anybody in a scarce position in terms of success for the course. So just keep at the portfolio. Remember, the course is really about a safe space to practice, experiment, play with technology. You've got my full attention and support. So just try to experiment with some of the things we've been engaging with. Have some fun with it, be creative, and build some capacity for perhaps things you might need to do in the future as a teacher. Any questions on that final meeting? I have had people approach me recently just to get a sense of where they're at. And if that's something you're concerned about, you can do that too. Just reach out to me. We can have a quick chat, or I can look over what you've done so far. But like I said, I'm not too concerned about folks not having completed the requirements. The portfolio, I hope, will not end when this course ends. I mean, it might be a little optimistic on my part, but I do think it's a valuable resource as a teacher for professional development, for capturing the things you're doing, the things you're interested in, and providing a bit of a space for reflection. So I hope your portfolio will flourish long after you leave the course, but I know that it may take a break and you may come back to it. So I hope it's just the start is basically the sentiment I wanted to get across. I mentioned that new post on assistive technologies. That's on the course website, so it'll always be there if you need to access it later. But I would encourage you at least take a look at it in retrospect with regards to last week's discussion, because I think it's a nice complement to what Tracy was sharing. And some of the things I know she talked about, AAC and FM technologies, they weren't well explained, but they're in that post, so you'll have a better sense of what she was talking about in terms of the actual implementation of accessible tech.
Can we link that post to our site?
Absolutely. Yeah, absolutely, Sarah. That's the idea. So with your portfolio, you can bring things from the course site that you want to keep track of or remember, links, graphics, whatever it be, or they're all licensed on that site for reuse. And you're definitely able to link to it. Yes. And then just, these are things I've been mentioning over the past couple of weeks, that Google Doc with the pods and pairs is still an important document. You're still keeping track of the meetings you're having with your pod. I've noticed a couple pods are missing a few dates. I don't know if that's because you just haven't filled them in or you haven't been meeting, but I may reach out to those groups if those gaps are still there in the next week or so. And then that's the place where you put your resource on your portfolio, but I'd like you to put a link to your portfolio and where the resource lives in that document as well. It's just for accountability, so I've got them all in one spot. Okay. And the dates for the presentation should go in there too. I haven't gotten any invites, but I'm still hoping I might at some point, because I do love to attend those presentations. And if we had more time, I'd love to do them in these sessions, but they would just end up being really long Zoom meetings. So we give Lara a chance to share about an upcoming workshop that is happening with EDSA. Lara, you want to tell us about it?
Hi. Yeah, so EDSA is going to be hosting a workshop tomorrow. It's called AI and Ethics. So it's about artificial intelligence and the way it impacts our daily lives and how it impacts online life. And they usually teach this to like teachers or students, just about it says in the description that we'll be able to train our own AI system or like get the beginning level of that. So it seems really hands-on. It seems like a great workshop to attend. Michael is coming, so we're trying to get co-curricular credit approved for it. And I can post the link to sign up in the chat. And it's just going to be tomorrow from 1 to 2:30, I believe. And there will be a social afterwards if anybody's interested. I think it's just going to be a bunch of games and hanging out with people in the faculty.
Great. Thanks, Lara. Any questions about that from the group? Lara, maybe you could also put it in the Mattermost main channel just so it's persistent if people want to come back to it this afternoon.
Yeah, I can do that. Thank you.
Brilliant. Thanks. Yeah, there's a lot of interesting rhetoric around artificial intelligence now, especially. There are aspects of the web that you interact with that have artificial intelligence built into them. And there's a lot of folks who are saying artificial intelligence will revolutionize teaching and learning. Of course, we'll have all our own intelligent tutor that can respond to questions and give appropriate feedback, etc. The time will tell. We'll see. There's also a lot of issues inherent in AI, which I hope come up in that workshop around biases that are trained into them, etc. You've probably heard stories about things like that as well. So I think it's a great deep dive on a really specific topic, but also something that we're hearing a lot about and probably will be a part of our lives as we go forward. Thanks for that. Okay, so I'm going to start off with a breakout. Just because you folks, you're living online learning. You are actually, all of your classes are online, from phys ed to music to education tech. It's really interesting. So I would like to hear what you think are the positive aspects as well as some of the negative aspects of learning in this way. And I've got a document that I will share in the chat. Same as always, I'll break you out and just spend a few minutes talking with your group and capture some of the positive and negatives in that document on the first page. And then we'll come back for a quick discussion about what you found. Okay, so I'm gonna break you out now.
Hey, Michael, my Wi-Fi quit Zoom for me. Okay. Can I get sent back to my breakout room? I was in breakout room number one.
Yes, I will put you back there. There you go.
Thank you.
couple groups holding out. All right, folks, are we back? All right, so thanks for that. I know that was a quick one, but I'd be very interested to hear, I didn't pop into any rooms this time, so I'd be very interested to hear so some of the more most important, maybe we could start with the positives around teaching and learning in this way. But raise your hand or grab the mic.
I'd say it's really helpful. For example, if it were normal times, online learning would allow people to have a mental health or sick day and still be able to participate in the class content and engage in the learning.
Absolutely, yeah. I haven't had a sick day in a year. you can't really qualify a sick day because you're staying home anyway, isn't that kind of funny? But yeah, some accessibility, right? The thing is, we switched everything to online. So if there was one learner who had to be online, we're going to talk a little bit more about that later today, but that makes it a little more difficult because then you're both face-to-face and online. Others?
Getting more sleep in the morning.
Yeah, you can kind of just roll out of bed and roll right into class. Or I didn't do that. I was up for a while. But, you can definitely do that or even just stay in bed. I'm sure nobody has to admit it, but I'm sure we've all been there maybe once or twice. Thanks, Marco. Any others?
All of the notes and like documents are like accessible for us. So I just download everything at the end of the year. So I have it as a resource. And usually like last year, I remember you just had to see the PowerPoints. They didn't give it to you as a like a resource, which is really, really helpful, honestly.
It's a really good point, Molly, because before we had to go online, a lot of instructors just did everything in the class with paper, or if you were there, you were there. If you weren't, you weren't. But now everybody's had to make their resources more accessible. I hope that persists beyond the pandemic. I hope some of the literacies that teachers are getting around, well, okay, well, I'm not only going to discuss this, but I'm going to make it available so students can return to it, or if they weren't there, they can access it. I do hope that that persists, but it's a really good point because it was sometimes like an echo chamber. You know, you would see the presentation, but that's all you get to do. You don't get access to it. So I hope it sticks.
Yeah. And with that, I feel like it kind of allows you to go at your own pace as well, because a lot of stuff is like posted early. So for me, I go ahead a lot of the time, or like this past week, I got my wisdom teeth out. So I tried to get stuff done before that, so that I wasn't too behind. So I feel like it allows you to kind of work with your schedule.
Yeah, absolutely. I hope you're recovering well, Michaela. You know, if you look at something in advance, you might generate questions. You might take a chance to dig and do a little bit of a internet searching to discover more. It can lead to a richer in-class experience. So that idea of front loading, not just giving homework, but also front loading for people to bring ideas to the classroom. Love that idea. I did see an anonymous gopher still typing in the document. So perhaps we should move on to those negatives, because I was hopeful that the positive list would be bigger, but it looks like the negative list kind of creeped up a little larger. Anyone want to share some of the negatives?
I think a huge one is just like on like Zoom fatigue, or like lab, like blue screen fatigue. Like it's so hard after class to like do work online. And like, even like when I relax, if I want to watch TV, it's like online, you know? So it's just a lot of screen time, which is kind of exhausting.
Yeah. Zoom fatigue is real. And I've got some research on that coming up today as well. Harsh.
I'd say, at least for myself, it's a lot easier to get distracted.
Hmm. Yeah, it certainly is. It's hard to, without, I think it hasn't been mentioned yet, but being together. I think we're coming out of this, we're all going to realize how important it is just to be able to cast an eye someone's direction. I can cast an eye at at Marco, but he can't even tell because I'm looking at all of you here in this grid of squares. But in a classroom, you might be able to do that, or you know, have a bit more of that social, physical proximity, which I think we're all very much missing. And it's so important for learning, right, as well? Sorry to interrupt.
No, for our cohort especially, like, we haven't met anyone and we're going to be with each other for like 4 years, right? It's like kind of nice that we're all together for each online class. Like, I found that super helpful, like compared to like a 300 person lecture online, which would suck. But I find it nice, and like, I honestly, like, we're just such social creatures, like, you know. I'm excited to meet everyone.
Yeah, two things there. We're going to have an epic party for this cohort at some point when we're all able to gather. We'll all come into the quad and just run together into a massive cuddle huddle or something like that. I'm sure it'll be a real blast. It will happen. We're getting closer to that. And it's going to be really meaningful. And you mentioned the 300 person lectures. Those are still happening in chemistry, biology, and other parts of the university. And I've talked to faculty there. We're trying to develop community amongst, can you imagine 300 people in a Zoom call?
One of my roommates is in psychology, and like, she says in the breakout rooms, no one talks. Like, it's like, they're just like, it's like such a blank field. Like, you just show up. I don't know. It's not university.
Yeah. You've got two advantages. You're in a cohort, so you go to every class with the same group, which is not necessarily the same in psych. And you also have a small class. And I'm so thankful that we have that advantage here in education. It says something about education and maybe some of the deficits in how universities are designed for educating in large numbers. It's very challenging. Even when they're in the classroom, it's challenging. And now that they're doing it online, things are just brought to the surface even more because they don't have that peer learning happening in the back of the classroom. Somebody asks, what did they just say? It's a lot harder to do all those things without being together. Thanks for that reflection, Molly. Any others?
For me, the biggest negative is just how much harder it is to connect with the profs. When you have questions about assignments and you want to get on it right away, or it's due the next day and you're waiting for an email back, you can't like go ask them after class type of thing. It's a lot harder, I think.
And not all profs are great with email. Sometimes they tend to go into an ether. We are experimenting with Mattermost in this class. This is only the second time we've done that. And we're trying to think of ways the program might use it to just create a little bit of more. Because sometimes people have asked questions there and I didn't even answer them. Someone else came in and answered them. So you get that peer learning and support happening too. So watch that space. Some people are more apprehensive about using that. It's funny, we'll talk about this too, but like messaging, I'm sure you've been in the position where you message someone, hey, why don't you message me right back? Because I saw that you read it. So messaging is almost becoming like a synchronous expectation as well. We'll talk a little bit about that today as well. But any others? Before we move on, good list. I do see the mental health and the physical health issues that are raised, very serious and important to be considered of. You have to be mindful of those things. If you are having any trouble with those, I encourage you to reach out to me or supports in the university that can help too. I saw the comment about hands-on classes, like how's phys ed going in Zoom? I mean, that would be a place where normally you'd be kind of very active, I would imagine.
It's not great, Michael. It's not great.
Yesterday we learned how to do the electric slide via Zoom. That was a time.
Was that recorded? Because I would like to see that.
Unfortunately, I don't think it was recorded.
Yeah, it's tougher for some folks teaching where it's meant to be more of a hands-on social, very, very tricky. We're kind of lucky in the tech class because really in the tech class, you actually get to use all the tech. And actually being an online learner will make you a better online teacher because you have had that experience of like the echo chamber, things not clear, resources, you don't know where they are or not provided at all. And I think you'll learn ways to be a better online teacher having succumbed to some of those challenges. Any last words, positives and negatives? Closed captions, yeah. Things are changing all the time, right? That's a pretty new one. That just came out a couple weeks ago. I'm just going to take a quick scan. Go ahead.
Also, getting to meet people's pets in Zoom calls.
Yeah.
I like that. When people's like cats walk across the screen, it's nice.
Yeah, I do too, Bryn. That's a great point. You know, I think when this started, everybody's like, oh, you know, I got to hide my, like, I kind of blurred out my background so you can't see my laundry over there. But, you know, it's fun to kind of have a window into other people's spaces. And that's why I've been trying to get people to bring things from their environment on the breakouts too. It's kind of just a fun way to try to make use of that home space. And it's true. Cats just, they love getting right up there, right? Dogs too, I've seen. I just really like to get right onto the keyboard. It's great. All right. Well, I'm going to move forward. Thanks for that. I will make this document available so you can use it for your reflection or have a look at it later. A couple of things I just want to get across in terms of theory. And maybe you've heard of these terms before, asynchronous versus synchronous. These are important terms in online learning because they define types of activity that you might engage in. Asynchronicity is when you're doing something on your own time. It doesn't have to be at the same time as your teacher or as your peers. You can think about like discussion forums where you can, you know, wake up at 3 a.m. with a brilliant idea and write it into the forum, or you can kind of do it on your own time. So it's asynchronous. While synchronous, Zoom is a great example. We all decided this is the time we're going to come together, have a conversation. And there's things you can do there, like respond to each other in real time that you can't do in an asynchronous way. And so largely synchronous activities are things like conversations. You may, like I said, find yourself in a chat where you're messaging right back and forth for a while, and then someone disappears and they become asynchronous. So it is possible to go through synchronous to asynchronous as well. And you've probably seen some of the tools people use for these types of activities. You know this one, I'm sure. This is a largely asynchronous learning environment. You can come here, access the resources on your own time. Perhaps there's some activities that you might do here. I'd be interested to know what kinds of activities you're doing here, and there'll be a chance to share that in a minute. But there's things like the discussion forums, of course, there's quizzes, there's portfolios in here, et cetera. And there's lots of different environments like this. If you've been at UVic for a while, we used to have a different one called Moodle or Course Spaces. That was just like Brightspace, but a little bit different. It was made by a different group of people, and it's actually an open source tool, whereas Brightspace is a company that was actually founded in Ontario, and they have a lot of schools and universities that use their product now. There's also others like Blackboard, there's one called Canvas. Some schools have these. The most common one schools would have would be Moodle, and I think like the UConnect group in the Lower Mainland uses Moodle for their asynchronous activities. And then more common ones in the schools, you've probably heard of Google Classroom. That's a fairly common school district 61. As far as I know, many schools have signed up with Google. And so they do use Google Classroom as sort of the hub for asynchronous. And Microsoft Teams, anybody hear about that tool? It is a fairly new entrant in the market. And It's a bit of everything. It's like a video service for synchronous activities. It's a chat and a document repository for asynchronous. So it's kind of a bit of a mix of both. Yeah, I see you're using Google Classroom for one of your other classes. That's great. If you do have interest in Google Classroom, you can actually set up your own Google Classroom. You don't need a special account. If you have a Google account, you can go to classroom.google.com and set up a classroom so you could see what it looks like if you wanted to experiment with that. And then if you find yourself in a school that's using Google Classroom, you probably have a bit of support. Your class list will probably be created automatically, which is a nice feature. So you can connect with people quickly and privately with the class. Anybody use Microsoft Teams? Teams had a huge outage yesterday. All of these services have outages. So that's something to be aware of, to keep in mind a plan B. Have your learners' emails ready to go if you need to, if they're not able to get into the environment that, that you have set up for them. I'm going to share a video, not here, but in the slides that you can watch, about digital learning environments, what these are. You can watch that on your own time or capture it on your portfolio if you wish. Let's talk about synchronous. These are common synchronous spaces. You're probably familiar with some of these. Classrooms, the one on the left, kind of a what they'd call an active learning classroom. You can move the tables around. If you get access to one of these, they're great. Unless you come into the room and it's just totally in disarray because the chairs have all been slid into one corner, and that happens. But they are useful for having active discussions or small group work. This class in the middle, it's the saddest class because it's kind of says a lot about what's going to happen here. So that's another kind of approach. And then, you know, in different parts of the world, there's different types of classrooms. There's an outdoor classroom in Kenya, I think, where the people are learning outside in the context in which they live. And now, of course, you know that there's another type of synchronous. This is us working in Zoom, spending a lot of time in Zoom. This one here up on the left is sort of the original Zoom. It was called Collaborate, and gosh, it was painful. But it's these sorts of tools have been around for 20, 25 years. They're not new, but they've just been popularized through the pandemic, not only for teaching, but for work, also for, has anybody had a Zoom meeting with their friends just to hang out? I did. It was different. Anyone else? No. Of course, you're connecting with family, connecting with friends, and sometimes this is the best option. This one down here on the bottom, this is Teams, and what they're trying to do is instead of having that grid of squares of videos, they're trying to put people, so it looks like they're sitting in rows. I don't know if I'm convinced that this will make the experience better, but this is the innovation that's happening in some of these places. So curious if anybody has any ideas. We talked about Zoom fatigue when we talked about the negatives. What is it about Zoom that people find so exhausting? Any ideas?
It's harder to engage. Mm-hmm.
Like, I didn't know you were about to talk. So if we're in the classroom, I might have seen you kind of shuffle towards speaking, but you just came out of nowhere there. So it's a different type of engagement. Staring up close at everyone's face. Yeah, here we go. Staring at my own face. Yes, Brandon. Any other ideas?
Just like
sometimes it's like, oh.
Sometimes you collide.
Issues too. I was just gonna say, like, the screen time in general is exhausting. Like, my eyes just like burn by the end of a day. Like, especially because like you have your Zoom lectures, and so that's like your regular class schedule. But then like all of our resources are on our computers. All of our assignments are completed on our computers. So it's like you're just on your computer so long and it's so straining for like your eyes and like, yeah.
Yeah. The thing I've heard about the eye strain is that I mentioned this before is it's a 20-20-20 rule. So every 20 minutes, you should look 20 meters into the distance. If you can, you have a window, you could look far away for about 20 seconds. So if you're able to do that, just keep that in mind. There's apps you can get that'll remind you, et cetera, but that 20-20-20, every 20 minutes, look 20 meters away for 20 seconds.
Yeah, you also don't leave your house. Like, you know what I mean? When you're going to classes, at least you're like commuting, you're walking around campus, you're walking to your other classes, you're like, there's like external stimulation, like your outside environment. When like you're on Zoom, like, and your classes are on Zoom, there's literally no reason for you to leave your house except like your own, you know, you pushing yourself to go outside for your own self, like your own health, you know what I mean?
Absolutely. But, and I think we probably didn't really consider how important all of those moments were before this, which is why you got to look at this as sort of like a positive thing. Like, we're going to come out of this appreciating just being on the bus. Oh, what an experience, right? Like people watching, you know, watching people hugging over there for whatever reason. It's just all those little joys. I think we're going to be so much more important once we come out of this. There was a collision and someone else was going to say something.
It was covered in the chat. I was going to say that I get easily distracted. So like, it's hard to like pay attention the whole time. Cause like I'm in my own room. Like there's no, yeah. I don't know if I'm in a classroom, there's like expectations there. Like here I can, it's easy. It's easy to lay in bed and listen to lectures sometimes.
Yeah. I mean, you're looking at your computer. So a rabbit hole is literally one tab away, right? Like you can go down like a, you know, crazy rabbit hole of research into something with while your professor's still talking and totally be lost on that. So yeah, easily distracted.
Yeah, like you can get like an email, you know what I mean? Like you're on your laptop, you're watching your lecture, you get an email from one of your other profs and it's got a link to like something else that you're supposed to do. And then you're like, oh crap, I better check that out. And then you're in your bright space for another class and you're organizing, you know, all this the crap that you have to do while you're in another class, so you're not really like learning what you need to in that specific class. So then you're gonna have to catch up on that later. It's like,
there's a lot of needed self-regulation. I'm sure you've heard that term. You'd benefit probably from just closing your email, putting your phone on silent, if you can, while you're in your class. That's what I've tried to do is just like, I even have people in meetings messaging me. To have like a back channel conversation. I'm just trying to ignore those because I just want to be in the experience. So you have to kind of self-regulate to try to minimize those distractions. All right, well, this is actually something that people agree is an issue. And very recently there was some research that came out of Stanford that identified some of the main issues. You've identified quite a few of these. That close-up eye contact, it's intense. We're looking at people not like we normally would in a classroom, so it's a bit much. Seeing yourself, I don't know if you've ever done it, but it is possible to turn off your self-view. And I think you just click on your square, and there's a little bit of a menu in that square, and you can hide self-view. You might want to try it sometimes. The first time I turned it off, I kind of sighed a bit of a relief. Like it was, oh, that's nice. I'm looking at the people who are here, not myself. Some of the research suggests that most people do spend most of their time looking at their own video, which is just not normal when you're working, interacting with a group of folks. It's true, Piper. You may forget and you might start.
And then you're picking your nose and you know, yeah. Your whole class sees you. You know,
in the worst case scenario, yes.
Okay. Like really, like you're eating like a sandwich, just really passionately, and your whole class, you know, can see you
and your microphone.
Because you're on. In your room, you know, yeah. You're in your room. You feel like you're in a private space.
Again, self-regulation. If you're gonna turn your self-view off, remember you're still being watched. I guess that's maybe the one thing to do. What about this one? Reducing our usual mobility, even if it's just kind of shuffling around, maybe walking over here or getting into groups. Remember when we used to actually have to go and get together? Now I can just put you into these groups. There's something about that as well, just that opportunity to stretch. You may not feel it's appropriate to do a big stretch. I think go for it in your Zoom classes. I think we all need it. So feel free if you do want to do that. And then there's the last one is the cognitive load is just much higher. And that's, I think, as a result of these first two, maybe the third one as well. It's just intensity and it's fatiguing overall. And you're trying to focus on everybody at once or see who is. Yeah, have you ever heard someone start talking and you scan to find which person is that? Because you don't recognize the voice. I sure have. That's really unsettling as well. So I've linked you to the link for this if you want to dig deeper. I think one of the groups is doing something about screen time. This might be a useful resource on that. So what's happening to alleviate some of these things? I don't know if you've heard of these virtual reality environments that people are creating. This one on the left, Second Life, it's been around for ages. Some people think it's going to make a big return. And this is the idea that you're meeting, you have an avatar that you can walk around the space. You don't look at yourself or the faces of others. You look at their avatars and you hear them. And you might engage in a discussion in that way. So that's out there. You can use headsets for this, of course, which I think probably many would be wary of considering the amount of screen time and eye strain they're experiencing already. But these are some of the solutions people have come up with. Another one. This one's called Gather Town, and a little hard to see, but these are little avatars, people, and you can walk around the space. And if you walk up to somebody else's avatar, you enter into a meeting with them and you can walk away and leave the meeting. It's just another way to kind of connect with people. I would run this with this group, but it's limited to 20 people right now. So there would be some exclusion there. Hey, and you know, increasingly I'm going to the telephone. I'm like, I don't need to talk to you on Zoom. I don't need to look at you. Just call me and we can get things done there. So sometimes I push meetings out of this virtual environment. If we don't need to share screens or collaborate, I don't think it's absolutely necessary in that case. So I don't know if you've used any of these strategies as well, but don't forget about the old telephone. It's useful. And I got to mention this one. This is probably one of my least favorite educational technologies. I don't know if anybody's ever had to experience one of these, but this is the idea that you've got a group of people in one location and you've got maybe a school or a class in another location, and you require these people to come and gather in a room and look at a television and be recorded. And it's called video conferencing, basically. This has been around for a long time as well to connect with remote schools. But all these people could be at home now. They don't have to come here and sit together and look at this television. They could do it on Zoom. So I think this is one of those things that will probably disappear. It wasn't as easy before because of local bandwidth, but I think increasingly we're getting connected enough that people could do this from home. Anybody had to sit through one of these? Count yourselves lucky. It's not great. Because you're not even really able to chat with one another because on the other end, they're just going for it. Quite a weird experience. And then I talked about this kind of merging of synchronous and asynchronous. Like Mattermost it's designed as an asynchronous environment. You can leave a message. Someone can reply later on their own time. I tend to treat these as synchronous. Like if I see a message, I try to reply as soon as I can. And then sometimes you have a conversation, like you're answering, I'm typing, you're answering, and they become kind of like a synchronous. So it kind of merges asynchronous and synchronous technologies together. And like I said, you've probably had that friend where you message them and maybe you're going back and forth for a while and then they disappear and you're like, hey, you know, we're having a conversation here, but it's actually just on iMessage and it's not necessarily a synchronous conversation. So it's an interesting phenomenon there. But increasingly, I think people are finding themselves, as you get more connected, I mean, I've got Mattermost on my phone, so, you know, there's really no excuse if I get a message coming in. But you kind of have to draw boundaries around those expectations with students as well, by communicating just what they can expect in terms of turnaround time and always online availability. Okay, I'm gonna take a break. It'll take, say, about 10 minutes. And if you wanna play, it's not picking up something in your house today. I want you to think about where you might like to travel when this is all over. And then we'll come back and do a quick activity on that and move on. So I'll give it about 10 minutes and get a stretch, rest your eyes, and we'll see you back at 11:28.
Michael, can you hear me?
Yeah, I can hear you.
I'm not a big fan of how WordPress updated to this block system. Have you noticed that?
No, I haven't. When did that happen?
I think just a few days ago.
Isn't that so annoying?
It's really annoying.
Oh, gosh. Why am I only hearing about this now?
Makes it a lot more difficult.
Okay, well, I'm pretty sure you have options. Let me just take a look here.
I'm pretty sure I've been dealing with the block system the whole time. So I'm surprised to hear that you guys are just on it now.
Yeah, like it just changed this week what it looks like when you make a post. It was weird.
You can change that back. I'll just wait till everybody's back and then I'll share that. I didn't know they were pushing that change. I'm going to have to dig into that, but you can change it back. So hold tight.
Great news.
There is a thing that you can pull up on the right that will have all the same stuff like as the old format, like where you can add categories and stuff like that. But when I first opened it, I was like, where did everything go?
Yeah, that I'm sure was not intentional. Somebody forgot to flip a switch because that shouldn't happen in the middle of the term to folks. That's quite jarring. So sorry about that. I will raise that with the admins as they are. Oh, Emily, where did you get that poster?
Yeah, I'm sorry, Michael. but where it was in my room when we started Zoom classes.
All good. It's your room. All right. Let me just get oriented here. Yes, let's come back together. Before, I know there's some questions about the editor in WordPress. Before we do that, let's just, if you want to play, you can annotate this map and let us know where you want to go. You can grab a stamp and maybe put a heart where you're hoping to maybe travel one day soon, if you've got a travel aspiration. Just pop a location on the map if you want. Mm-hmm. Yes, travel. Can you imagine?
Wait, how do we access this?
You should have an annotation toolbar. I've made it available to folks. And you can put a stamp or draw a circle or indicate where you would love to travel once this is all over. We're getting closer. Good spread.
I'm trying to find this. One sec.
Who's speaking? Sorry, I missed that.
Up in view options. Hit what? What?
So your Zoom toolbar where you can access.
Oh, Zoom option.
Yeah.
Annotate. Got it. Woo! I'm going to do a star.
Very good. I'll save a copy and share that with you as well. No love for Canada, but there's lots there still as well that you can travel to. Even on this island, if you're on the island, there's so much to see still. So yeah, we'll get there soon. I have good feelings. Thanks for that. So on the break, some folks raised the concern around their WordPress writing editor a little bit. It's looking a little bit different. So yes, it sounds like the admins released the block editor, which is very different than the regular editor you've been dealing with the whole term. If you want to switch that back, oh, I'm going to turn off my annotation. All right. If you want to switch that back, oh gosh, I'm going to clear this. You can do that in your dashboard, and it's found under the settings and writing, and you can change the default editor to the classic editor. That's the one that you've been using up till now. I'll put these instructions in the post this week too, so you can follow along. But I think what's happened is they've made the block editor the default, but you have control to switch that back, and that's a pretty quick fix. The block editor is supposed to be the new one that's supposed to be better, but a lot of people find it discombobulating just because it's so different than the typical editor. So I know there's been a little bit of frustration with the switch. It's not as seamless as one would hope. Any questions on that? Settings, writing, default editor. Okay, well, let's move on. I don't want to keep you too much longer here. A couple more things to share. You think about your own courses this term, you can probably now that we know what asynchronous and synchronous is, you can probably identify some of the different strategies your instructors are using. I was going to do a breakout on this, but I don't think I will. Just be mindful and watching how people are communicating and how they complement a synchronous activity with an asynchronous. All of these things are how learning online gets designed. And they have to be intentional by the teacher to be useful, I think. So be mindful of that. You're probably seeing, I'm sure you're seeing Brightspace, seeing WordPress as asynchronous learning environments. What else have you seen? I heard somebody say Google Classroom. Any others?
For our music class, like we just use Brightspace, but we have like weekly modules and there's like reading and discussion posts, and then some videos that we're supposed to watch on our own time. So we only have our Zoom lecture like once a week, where technically our class is blocked out for the twice a week, but we have that other work to do on our own.
Right. Thanks for sharing that, Madeline. So that's an important point as well. Video can be asynchronous as well. If you create a video that people can watch on their own time, it's an asynchronous resource, not synchronous. You can't respond in real time. So that's another way to complement some of those activities in video shared through Brightspace or any other learning environment. And everybody's using Zoom for the synchronous component. You're not using Teams or Google Meet or the endless supply of other tools out there. There's tons, and you're probably well aware of this. You've probably used, if you use WhatsApp, there's a video service built into that. If you use iMessage, you've got FaceTime. Is it still called FaceTime? Yeah. So there's all kinds of ways people can set up synchronous video, but some of them are just more suited to educational settings. Like Zoom has the security. We haven't had a Zoom bombing incident in a while. I'm sure you heard about those in the early days of the pandemic. Awful, awful incidents where people just bombed in and did awful things. So they've built in some of that security, so it's safe for these types of environments. There's lots of players in the market and things you're familiar with too, built right into your phone. So I thought maybe instead of doing it for all of our courses, we could just do it for this course. I'm just going to walk through this together. And I've got it on two kind of axes here. I've got asynchronous versus synchronous activities, and then also learner controlled activities versus like teacher controlled, right? So if I open this up, and I'll give you the link to it as well. I'm going to go through sort of the main components of this course and try to plot them on this grid. Let's start with this first one, the course homepage. Now, is that asynchronous? Is it synchronous?
Asynchronous.
Asynchronous. Thanks, Bryn. And is it more learner controlled or teacher controlled?
Teacher controlled.
Teacher controlled. I have all the power on the course homepage to define what shows up there, when it shows up, and what it looks like. So yes, asynchronous, teacher controlled. What about these weekly meetings? Well, it's right there in the title.
Synchronous.
Excellent. And would you say these are teacher or learner controlled?
Probably in between, because there's both communication from both parties.
Yeah, there's probably a fair bit of control on my end. Like I can boot people out or silence people. I never do that, but they give those controls to teachers. Can you imagine? Like you can silence people or turn their video off, or you have a lot of power. I don't use that power. It's about exercising and wielding that power. But we try to give some control to groups to have their own discussions through the breakout rooms. So you can see within that tool, you can do different kinds of teaching. You've probably experienced it. Sometimes I'll lecture for way too long and then it's like sleep time. And sometimes it's more active and you're actually interacting with groups and it's more your time, so you have the control. So it comes down to design again. What about that? I call it a back channel chat. It's the Mattermost. Synchronous or asynchronous?
Asynchronous, I think, because like you don't have to be live with someone when you're sending a message. You can send a message and then wait for them to respond.
Absolutely, yeah. Absolutely. So mostly asynchronous, although sometimes people respond very quickly. It almost feels as if it's synchronous, but you can't be sure of that, right? You don't have that assurance. What about teacher versus learner controlled there?
Probably both, because it depends on both parties on when they respond.
Yeah. Yeah, I mean, we all have the same role in Mattermost. So if you wanted to create a group to have a chat with six people, you could do that. If you wanted to create a chat for your pod, you could do that. If you wanted to create a chat for your class, we could make a different class. We could make that happen. So you do have a lot of control. Maybe it hasn't been exercised just yet, but that just may be because it's kind of a new environment for you. Bryn, go ahead.
I was just going to say, should the synchronous meetings be moved more towards synchronous? Right now it's in the middle.
Oh, yeah. Thank you very much. No, that's the idea. We're working on this together. I appreciate it. Good. What about your portfolios? Are those asynchronous or synchronous?
Asynchronous?
Yeah. Yeah. You're kind of working on those on your own time. And people are accessing them on their own time. So yeah, I'd say very, very much asynchronous. And then teacher controlled or learner controlled?
Learner controlled.
Yeah, I mean, you have full control over what goes there, how it's presented, and your voice through that medium. So lots of control for that asynchronous tool. I assume you have some sort of other environment that you talk to each other about, maybe about us, and we're not invited to. This always happens. Some people use, like, I think last time they were using Instagram, Facebook groups, iMessage groups, whatever. Do you mind, anybody mind sharing what you folks are using?
We have group Facebook.
Facebook, cool. Yeah. And you got to have your own space.
Snapchat.
Okay, Snapchat too.
Yeah.
Important to know, and you probably thought, hopefully had thought about this, maybe not everybody's using Snapchat. Maybe not everybody's even using Facebook. Facebook's in some cases not being used as much by the younger population. So just be very mindful of being exclusive to those, or having people feel pressured. Oh, I got to get into Facebook or I won't be able to access that group. So try to keep inclusivity in mind in those spaces. But that is, do you use that asynchronously or synchronously? Do you do your own video meetings?
No, we don't do our own video meetings, but we message on there a lot. And I think everybody is on the Facebook page, but I don't think everybody's on the Snapchat, but we primarily use the Facebook one.
And do you do Snapchats to communicate with each other, or do you use just text back channel messaging?
Both.
Oh, it's cool. Just for fun. That's mostly cool.
Yeah, Snapchat is more for fun.
Excellent. Okay. I'm sure it is. That's awesome. So I'm going to put that sort of, you folks have full control, collaboratively have taken over this space to keep synchronous communication. Weekly pod meetings. There may be some debate on this one because some people have met via text and others have met synchronously on video.
Our group, we've been doing Zoom calls, so it's all been completely synchronous for meetings for a pod.
Yeah. And that would be teacher controlled, learner controlled.
Learner controlled.
Yeah. Teacher inspired or regulated or encouraged, maybe. And then I know not a lot of folks have jumped into social media, but if you can imagine what the social media component might be like, largely asynchronous ways to connect with people. You don't even have to have a conversation, you just follow them. And that's learner controlled too. You can take that up or not as you wish. So you can see here, at least with this course, we've got kind of a spread of activities to try to take advantage of a whole bunch of different mediums to give, control to the learner as much as possible as well, or provide space where learners can take that initiative and have their own space. It doesn't happen in all courses. Sometimes it's all teacher controlled, top down. And so I'm just encourage you, as this exercise elucidates, you can kind of think about, it's a combination of tools, perhaps the affordances of these tools that allow you to develop more agency. Yeah, thank you, Abigail. Any other comments on this? Anything missing? Anyway, I'll share this diagram out as well, so you can use this as a reflection component if you wish on your portfolio. One thing that gets often said is that, you know, online learning is just passive. You know, it's not as engaging. You know, there are issues, as we talked about, the positives and negatives, but it's not like it's just passive, right? It's about what the teacher does, what they invite the learners to do. It is possible to be active. And it's not just about the modality, whether it's online or face-to-face. It's about the pedagogy. What do you actually do as a teacher when you ask of your learners? And that can change. I mean, you can have classrooms that are really passive, where learners are not able to do much. And you can have online spaces that are the same, or you can have active classrooms and active online spaces. So just recognize that it really isn't confined to the modality of learning. It's really up to the teacher to create space for agency and different types of activities. Take advantage of things like, you know, we talked about breakout rooms in this class before. The fact that I can put you in random breakout rooms within like a second, that's not something you can do in the classroom very easily. It would take 5 minutes to get everybody organized into their space. So there is some things that you can not do in the physical environment that are now possible in the virtual environment. So think about those too, if you do get in a position where you have to teach this way. Go ahead.
Also with the breakout rooms, I feel as though it's like we're with different people like every time. So it's kind of nice to get to know everyone, I find, like rather than like getting with the same groups every time, but yeah.
And that's so important now, because you're not like crossing the hall or bumping into each other outside of the classroom. And I heard that last term from my students as well. And they just said, I haven't met any of these people. And there's some people I've never spoken to because we've never landed in a breakout room. So, you know, we have to create space for those chance encounters, or you have to self-regulate and create your own opportunities to connect. Like, you know, I haven't spoken to, you know, Ben in this class. I'm just going to reach out and try to connect on Mattermost or on a Zoom meeting or whatever it be. So it's a combination of both, but we have access to these tools. You can set them up just like I can if you need to have meetings, as you know. So I appreciate that comment as well, Molly. Thanks. Anybody hear about this story? So there's a guy taking a online course and was writing to his instructor. It was an asynchronous course. So they were just watching videos and doing activities. Maybe you've had an online course like this where there's no synchronous. Anybody done an online course where it's just, here's the website, access the resources, do the activities, finish. And you may never speak to the instructor. This was the example here. And the student reached out to the instructor, didn't get a response, Googled them, and found out that they had passed on some years ago. And so they are watching these lectures that had been recorded years ago from an instructor that was now no longer with us and had some real questions around that. And I can imagine you would too, around the ethics of that. How the university decided to keep offering these courses. There's a lot of buzz about this, and I've put the links in so you can read more about this. They talked to the professor's son, and the son thought he thought his father would be really happy that his legacy as an educator would live on in this way. But it raises a lot of questions around academic labor and the role of the teacher, et cetera. Any comments on this example? I think personally, all online courses should have a synchronous component, or at least you should have an opportunity to do drop-in office hours at the very least with the person who's teaching the course. I agree, Abigail, it should have been clear to the students that maybe, you know, there was a TA kind of handling the class, but that's right, they need someone to connect with. But I think the student Googled the prof's name instead of the TA email provided maybe in the syllabus, and that's how it was discovered. So you'll see if you've ever taken an online course at UVic, it just says online and there's no time, no date. And that's a big problem for instructors who want to do synchronous when within online courses, because you get these students that sign up for these and they're like, oh, I thought it was online. You know, I'm in Japan and I can't connect synchronously. I'm not going to wake up at 3 a.m. Or something like that. So we're trying to get that changed so that there is at least an hour every week that an online course, it doesn't have to be a lecture. It could just be a chance to ask questions or connect. And it's so easy now to do so. So I'm hoping that's another change that'll come out of the pandemic. Said it before, it all comes down to design. And if you get into a position where you have to teach online, I hope you don't, if you're not interested in doing that, but the pandemic has showed that some teachers have found themselves in that position very quickly, almost a year ago today. And so, you know, this isn't an online learning design class. There's lots of resources you could access. If you do find yourself in this position, of course, you can reach out to me if I can help. But just think of design, think of agency, think about creating space for students to have some control, just like you would in your classroom, and go slowly. Don't expect too much. I think that was one thing that came out of the pandemic, is they tried to just put everything online and everybody was just overwhelmed, and home internet connections were overwhelmed. And we didn't know what technology was in the houses with the students. And it was a bit of a challenge, of course. If anybody has children, you probably would have experienced some of this sometime around this time last year. And another tool you can use is just think about how people interact in online spaces. Of course, there's a student-teacher interaction. So you're sharing resources, asking good questions, assessment, formative evaluation. But also think about how students will interact. So breakout rooms is one option. Group work is another. And then how do students interact with content and ideas? So that's another way to kind of think about on a broad level, how you might design an online course, how they're going to interact with you, how they're going to interact with peers, and how they're going to interact with some of the content you'll put forward for them to engage with. There's also frameworks for decolonizing and bringing Indigenous perspectives into online learning. I think these apply both for online or in-class learning. So the idea of respect, reciprocity, relevance, responsibility, and relationships, keep these in mind when you're designing learning. And you can design inclusive and equitable environments, whether it be online or face-to-face. So a lot of these frameworks do apply to both in-class or face-to-face, or rather online. And I'm just giving you these resources so you kind of got them. If you get yourself into a position, this is one to think about, like, what do I do before the course starts? You know, what do I do for the first week? And then what do I do throughout? These are also mainly for online courses, but could be considered strategies for face-to-face as well. Yeah, and then just make sure people have things at the right time. You know, when we're in the class, we have that physical space. I can put something on the board. I can give handouts. If you're online, you got to make sure that those are delivered electronically and the right time. They're accessible. People have the resources they need. So it's that, again, it's all really down to design. Like, you have to think of it like a blueprint and think about the time learners are going to need to spend before the class, during, after, with homework, et cetera. Lots of things you can do with homework. Of course, you know, you can have students review resources asynchronously online, not things you create, but things you found, or read articles or bookmark things, do an inquiry through the web, do gaming and coding, which we're going to look at over the next couple of weeks, some applications of how to get students involved in games or coding projects. And yeah, I've put a bunch of resources in that you can access. This is a great podcast. Jennifer Gonzalez is, she's in the States, but she's a really thoughtful K-12 educator and does a lot of podcasting around how to teach. And she's focused a lot about how to teach online over the past year. So Cult of Pedagogy is her podcast, and I suggest take a listen. I love podcasts. I'm always listening to podcasts. I don't know if you are, but there's a lot of great teacher podcasts. And so you might be listening to podcasts about popular media, but if you do and you're into that kind of space, look for teachers too. I've put a bunch of them on our website that I listen to, but if you have others that you know of, I'd be interested in having you share those back. This is a good one to check out. And then one thing that online learning does afford us is some signals. Like, you know, in those asynchronous learning environments, you can usually see, you know, who's logged in and when they last logged in. And this is a bit, it's a bit tricky because it's almost like surveillance in a way. But if you're a teacher with the right intentions, you might actually use it for intervention. You might be like, you know, Sarah has not logged in a week, but I was hoping that they would look at this resource before the class. It might be a chance to reach out to that person and say, hey, just want to be clear, you need to access this resource before you meet tomorrow. So I've had a lot of conversations with people around, these are called learning analytics, like, you know, how much time did someone spend in the learning environment? How many resources did they access? A lot of those environments give those metrics to teachers, but I think they can be used for positive intervention. And so just keep that in mind as well. That's something you can do to watch. You wouldn't necessarily get that signal. You might ask your face-to-face classes, did everybody, you know, do the activity I asked last night? And they might say yes, but you may not actually know for sure until you have some sort of assessment. Okay, I'm gonna wrap up here. I will give you these slides. I just wanna talk about the dichotomy between face-to-face and online. There's a kind of a mixed component now that's blended. So you do meet face-to-face, you do have online activities. Sometimes that's just homework, but you may find you have a Google Classroom or a Moodle in your school. So you can do things in class and then you can contact them online and you can blend the two worlds together. So that's something to be mindful of, but also you may find that there's some learners who just can't come to class, right? Yeah, even outside of the pandemic, you may find that someone has an autoimmune disease or some other consideration that they just can't come to the class, but they still want to participate. So what do we do with those learners? Typically they've been sent to online schools or homeschooled, but it is possible if a teacher is willing to create space for that student to access the classroom, like a couple different ways. There's some things we've seen where learners who are homebound are beamed in to the environment through simple things like iPads or mobile phones. They could be brought in to the projector. This is an example from a school in Alberta. And there is things like robotics that are coming up too. You may have seen these things on within popular media, TV shows, I think. I forget the name of the show that had one of these rolling around. They're kind of novel, but some schools are using these to give learners access to the classroom, not only the ability to hear and see, but also now to move around and talk to different people in the space. We do have a couple of these devices in our lab. If we were to face-to-face, I would roll it in and so you could see it. And if you do want to see that, once we get back to face-to-face, you can contact me and I can show you what these look like. It is possible. So it's just expanding what we believe to be possible in terms of providing access. And then the hardware is a bit expensive, but they may become more common and inexpensive as time goes on. Right, so one last activity, and maybe we'll just do this as a big group since we're close to the 90-minute mark. We talked a little about, you know, what is only possible when you're teaching face-to-face and what is only possible when teaching online. I'll give you a document we can look at. Sorry. You can jot down a couple ideas there, or if anybody wants to reflect, grab the mic and do share.
when teaching's online, you can be anywhere in the world, which is really cool.
Excellent point. Yeah. And you can bring in guests, right? Yeah, there's a program called Ask a Scientist where you can connect with scientists and they'll come into classrooms and talk about, you know, things related to what's happening in the world, like the Mars expedition. So you can look at those opportunities as well. Great, great idea. Instant breakout rooms is one that we kind of talked about earlier today. You can be a little bit more, you know, you don't have to turn your camera on unless your instructor requires it, which is kind of a nice way to just engage in a different way. I hope everybody who's got their webcams off is still listening, but I don't know, but I trust you all. So that's another thing that's a little bit different. Oh, there's Marco. there's some different affordances, certainly, in these environments. And that may be a good, these may be good prompts for the weekly reflection as you go forward. Unless anybody had any other thoughts. All right, well, I will end it there. I'm going to hang around, as always, if anybody wants to chat. And do watch Mattermost. I think Lara said she would share more info on the workshop tomorrow. And wishing you well. I'll post the slides and a to-do list shortly today. If there's questions, contact me on Mattermost, and I'll put the booking form for the final meeting up. Complete the doodle, please, and reach out to me anytime as you need. Have a good week.